Good morning, good morning, good morning. Hey, everybody, how you doing? Schmitty with Talking Schmidt. And look, every morning I wake up, I get a message from Timothy Donald McKenney, the homie down in San Mateo, just saying, is it up? Get it up. Is it up? Get it up. Well, guess what? It's fucking up, guys. Today, Greg Carroll. Let's go.
Fuck are they, dude? I need my Talking Schmidt, man.
This is Greg Carroll, and you're about to dive into Talking Schmidt.
Hey,
Talking Schmidt.
I'm already not watching.
It's cool, like tonight is the night.
Damn, this is like the coolest thing I'm ever gonna do.
I wouldn't say it was fun.
What do you mean? Well, Christian Fletcher's younger brother.
Fuck the Dodgers.
Oh, big dog's in. What do you think, Dolan?
John? Schmitty?
Talking Schmidt.
Alpha Macaroni.
Most of these guys, their opinion don't matter.
Talking Schmidt, right?
It's skateboarding.
I remember that.
Talking Schmidt.
What are Yuns doing?
Holy shit.
Skateboarding homies.
No, Schmidt, you can't jump in.
What is happening?
I'm here for Greg Smith.
Yay! Gregory.
Wi-Fi check one, Wi-Fi check two.
All right, guys, check this out. I made a studio in my house. First time ever, because I got Greg Carroll here with me. And today we're going to dive into a lot of stuff. Me and Greg go way back, and basically there's a lot of people involved in helping me out, but Greg is definitely a major, major guy that did a lot for me. Me and Phil showed up to think together, and then Greg let me learn how to contribute to his company with Keith and Fish. So we're going to get into it. Greg, thank you.
Yeah, bro. Thank you for having me.
It's going to be fun.
Super fun, man. It's an honor, man. I appreciate everything you've already done with this podcast, and it's fun to watch it and having McKenney chime in every once in a while.
Shout out.
Brings out a lot of good memories, man. So it's an honor to be with you, and you know, thank you for this opportunity.
Dude, one thing I wanted to ask you is I was Googling your name this morning, and there's another Greg Carroll.
Yeah.
Do you know about this? Skater.
Yeah.
It's supposedly the first movie that ever was documenting skateboarding in 1965. Mm-hmm. His name is Two G's, G-R-E-G-G. Yeah. But I was like, damn, I never.
Yeah, what's RIP to him, because a few years back, I guess he must have crossed over and people were freaking out thinking it was me.
Oh, serious?
Yeah. And then I think he got inducted into the Hall of Fame, Skateboarding Hall of Fame, and people are like, congratulations, bro. I'm like, what the fuck? Like, I didn't get in this thing. And it turned out it was him, you know? So yeah, there was a very light confusion. And I honestly didn't even know about the guy until a few years ago. Mm. People started hitting me up like, oh my God, dude, are you still alive? Or, hey dude, you're in the Hall of Fame? I was like, that's not me, man. Like, who is this guy? And I Googled him and I was like, oh, rad, man.
Yeah.
Two G's, not one.
Very interesting.
Yeah.
So let's get into like the early days. I know you were born in Michigan and then came out to California. Mm-hmm. When did the four wheels on a board come into your life?
Interesting question, dude, because I literally just found a poster for Skateboard, the movie. This was like before Skateboard Mazes.
Yeah.
1977, so I was 6 years old.
Mm.
And I don't even know how I have that poster. Maybe somebody gave it to me. There was that, you know, I was 6 years old, but my uncle used to make boards with his buddies and skate down slope in the city. So I was kind of, and I didn't really even know about that much, or I don't know how that got introduced, or maybe I was watching either Skateboard, the movie, or Skateboard Madness. And I remember seeing this guy skating the loop. I'm blanking. Is Kent something? I can't remember. Sorry, Kent, dude. But somebody else, maybe Glenn Freeman, shot the photo of him.
Mm-hmm.
And I remember, like, that dude just, like, exploded in my head. I was like, oh, my God, dude, this is what pulled me into skateboarding. Like, I was like, wow, what are they doing? How are they doing this? I want to do this. And I kept telling my uncle, like, you know, you got to make me a board. You got to make me a board. And I don't know if my mom was like not having it, or, you know, my uncle was kind of a stoner dude and grow weed and drinking and shit. So he never really made me a board, but he came home one day with this yellow USA Marina banana board that I never got to ride ever. I think my mom just was like, nope,
not having it.
You're seven. You're not getting on this thing. But you know, I was so passionate about it that I literally saved money in a Folgers coffee can for years. And in Daly City, down the street in Westlake, there's a King Norman's toy shop.
Mm.
And they had skateboards. And I remember going in there with my grandfather, and I had the change, and I just put it on this table. And I was like, I want that Veriflex flexible flyer board. And it was like this big eagle on it and stuff. And that was my board for years. These green, not green, but orange, I think there might have been Kryptonics or Veriflex wheels, probably Veriflex wheels. And I rode it for a long time, and so much so that I started learning how to do tail skids. So I wore out the tail, so I had to figure out how to drill it, the tail forward,
uh-huh,
and like walk down the street and just drag my board so it would round the tail about again, you know, pretty wild. But then there was one day I was skating from my grandmother's house, was like a few blocks away to mine, and I was carving in the street, and I tried to go up, you know, a driveway, and the front truck broke. So I didn't get to skate for, you know, probably, I was probably like 9 or 10. And then by the time I was in eighth grade, Mike and myself's cousin, him and his buddies were skating, and I was like, oh my God. And these dudes were down in Burlingame area, and they were doing jump ramp stuff.
Mm.
You know, this is pre seeing Tommy and those guys in San Francisco ever, pre Future Primitive. So I was just
before
like,
Sick Boys.
Before Sick Boys, way before Sick Boys. Uh-huh. You're talking 83, 84 maybe.
Okay.
And I was just like, oh my God. So I told my cousin, like, dude, you know, you got any extra stuff? So he hooked me up with like an extra board. It was like a PAL Mini Rat or something, you know, Bones wheels, the whole deal. And then that was like my first kind of like real setup. And then I think Mike got a hand-me-down from him or either, but it was like you know, we went to Toys R Us and got like a Nash Executioner for Mike. And that was it.
And after that,
it was just like full speed ahead, you know, and then it eventually evolved into, you know, going down to Skeets on Hate and buying like this Ray Bones Rodriguez Skull and Sword of like full blown, like nose bone, tailbone, rails, the whole kit, you know. But that was like the initial thing. And then, but that only lasted for a little while before I realized, like, I saw the Alva guys.
Mm.
And from then on, I just rode Alva boards. You know, maybe I had like a Jeff Kendall Pumpkin Santa Cruz board. Sure. That was right around the time, 1986, when Gons and Nottis came down, and they did the doubles on the pyramid, and Gons ollied the what then was just a wave of, you know, and he made the Gons channel. But that was like right around that same time is when I just switched over, and I only rode like Bill Danforth boards for some reason. And I rode a lot of Concrete Jungle boards, you know, just because they were here in the city. But I figured out that their wood was Alva.
Mm.
And I loved Alva.
Was that when they had the flip tails?
Yeah, it was dog-eared.
We thought you could ollie higher because it felt like you could, because it would just pop.
Yeah, it was. They had tri-tails.
Tri-tail, yeah.
Yeah, it was a tri-tail. And then they had, after a while, there was like these little dog-eared kind of tails that would come up. But
we
fucked
with Alva. Chris Cook, Radigy, yeah. And there was one other one that we really liked.
Screaming Freddie.
Freddie Smith. Yeah, Fred I think Smith. Chris Cook was, because he was local, yeah. He was the one that I always got when I was in my Alva phase.
Yeah. I met Chris Cook first time ever. We were in Pacifica at the pit, they called it.
Oh, yeah, Devil's Pit.
Devil's Pit. And it was Devil's Pit because it was raw, grimy, crazy stuff. And I remember going up there, and we had to like fully clean it out by hand, and Chris showed up, and I was just like, oh my God, this dude just flowed. He must have had like some super soft wheels, and he was just carving everything, going up on the plywood, coming back down, like, and then he was just like, who the fuck is spray painting here? They should be doing that shit. He was just like, rah, and I was gnarly. Like, wow, this dude is gnarly.
Yeah, that, you know, place was so gnarly, and nobody skated it like him. He somehow, I remember because I worked at Go Skate in those times, and they had these wheels called garbage can wheels because they were the wheels that you put on the garbage cans to push them around, so they were extra soft.
Mm-hmm.
And we would take those as wheels to put on only when we skated there. So because it was rough as shit. But dude, you would look at photos and video of Cooksey in there. Shout out to Mesa, one of his favorite skaters, Chris Cook. And you'd be like, how the hell did he get there?
Yeah, exactly,
like,
bro.
Did he get towed in by a bike?
Yeah, like, how is he going so fast, yeah, man? Yeah, you know, and then eventually it was like, when I couldn't get a Bill Danforth board, I would ride a Fred Smith board. I'd ride some Chris's boards every once in a while, you know, but then, you know, things just evolved.
How early were you getting the mag? Like, when did you start looking at mags?
I don't remember. I could see the cover. I think it's Lance. There's not skating. It's like kind of like a burgundy edges. Mm-hmm. And Lance is in this kind of like...
Yeah.
That might have been 86.
Okay.
Very, very much the year, especially because of Future Primitive, that just opened it up for us, you know. And when I think about 86 now, I think about the number 43.
Yeah.
And the fact that 86 was such a key point in my life of like... This is when skateboarding really, like, we were already skating in Embarcadero. Mm-hmm. You know, this is pre the EMB crew and all that stuff. But, and then how Orb and his dad started bringing in that vibe of the 43 and all that stuff. And I'm thinking about it now, I'm like, wow, what a crazy time to be in the beginning of street skating. Mm-hmm. Like, full on.
Yeah.
You know, like Lucero and... those guys skating outside the skate park, they got kicked out. They were just skating here in Rocco, you know, skating, and like the invention of like curb skating and hand plants and all that stuff, taking whatever they were doing on vert out to the streets. Mm-hmm. But we didn't see that. We saw Future Primitive and we just saw Tommy and it was just like, whoa, dude, you know, this is next level. And I remember even before that, I think it was my first year in high school. There was a senior dude. I don't remember what his name was, but he bombed down Southgate, which is like from where we lived in Daly City all the way down the hill. It's a long bomb, dude, all the way down to Westlake Shopping Center, standing up. And we were butt boarding. Like, our mom was pissed because we would shave off the the end of our heels of our shoes. And this dude was bombing it. And then like years later, having the guts after watching those guys bomb hills in the Powell video, you know, doing the cam, the gloves on and doing stuff and like power slides. And we're doing, learning how to power slide. Like my, I grew up around these two brothers, the Teddy and Eddie Watalas. And Eddie had like shoe good, I guess it was like pennies or something on his hands that he would just like try to do power slides the length of a house. And we're like, whoa, you know, super fun. But
yeah,
then
we did that.
Seeing the ollie, you know, for the first time and like learning how to ollie. My first ollie ever up a curb was at Fernando Junior High up the street from our house. And I remember doing it and going like, what? Because with the ollie, you know, shout out to Alan Gufflin for bringing that into skateboarding. Without that, it, you know.
Yeah.
We wouldn't have modern skateboarding.
Did you see like the cover of Rodney Mullen doing it? Like, who was, what was one of the early street, you're like, because in vert, it's obviously a little different. And then street skating, I don't think even street skating was totally on board, but freestyle was. Mm-hmm. So Rodney, I think, had the photo in SF Downtown on the cover.
Yeah.
And I feel like that's one of the earliest ollies I remember seeing on a street.
Yeah, I think again, Future Primitive, Ronnie's part in Future Primitive was just, that shattered the
world.
Anything that we thought that wasn't possible became possible. But again, all due credit to Tommy, like skating the avenues, skating around places that we saw, you know, in real life. Like, whoa, this is actually doable. We can do this. But it also inspired me to make jump ramps and, you know, in high school.
Right.
You know, in woodshop class.
Yeah.
You know, and then doing skate jams at my high school and the junior highs. And like, we didn't have internet back then, so it was all word of mouth. And we had one of the last ones we did, it was jump ramps. You know, I think I made a couple banks or something, but like Bryce and Tommy came.
Oh shit.
2 hour skate jam in Daly City. And all my friends are like, dude, how did you get Tommy to get here? I was like, oh my God, dude, Tommy Girls at my fucking ski jam, bro. This is amazing. You know, and Bryce, and I was like, oh my God, dude. And then years later, my sophomore year in high school, two guys, this guy Matt Fogey and Mike Del Campo, skaters, but they were like football dudes too. But Mike Del Campo had a vert ramp in his backyard.
Oh.
And
In Daly City,
yeah. Keith Cochran, Dean Coppola, and a couple other heads, older guys, would skate that. But then they had to cut it down. So Mike was like, dude, you want the wood? I was like, hell yeah. I told my mom, I was like, can we put a ramp back there? She's like, yeah, but don't screw up my rose bushes.
Yeah.
You know? And that's how we got that mini ramp. And but those two dudes, I don't know how they figured it out, but they're like, dude, you got to go down to this place called Embarcadero. Mm. It's literally like they have a wave. There's all these ledges. And I'm, in my mind, I was like trying to visualize what they were talking about. And I was like, dude, this is crazy. Like, I don't think I've, like, how do you even get there? You know, like, oh, you got to take BART. And I was like, that might have been one of the first times I took BART without my parents.
Oh, shit.
Yeah, it was me, Mike, and my buddy Paul Gutierrez. Funny shot about this one. We get there, we're hanging out skating, and my friend Paul's like, dude, I think Mofo was just here and he shot a photo of you, bro. I was like, no way, dude, where's he at, dude? He's like, I don't know. And he was fucking with me, he lied. He was fucking with me just to joke around. But dude, I mean, because I was doing board slides on the ledge closest to the stage of the pyramid, which is now called the C block.
Yeah.
And the only reason why I was able to do it on there was because we had the photomat block, which is like an old photo developing center, small little kiosk thing in the middle of the Westlake Shopping Center.
Mm.
And they took it out, and there was a platform like, you know, this high, and that's where we learned to do a lot of tricks.
Sick. Did you guys ever skate those library banks in
South City?
South City?
Oh yeah, dude. Yeah, that was one of the most incredible places
like
to skate.
Yeah, you're like, how is this place even, what?
Yeah, like how did this even come about? And I think that we found that place somehow because there's a guy a couple grades older than me, this guy Marcus, who there was one time me and Mike went through some shit. I think we ran away and we stayed with him, but he like was like, we're just gonna stay all night. And he took us down to, do you remember Purulator Banks?
Yeah.
Yeah, over by Tanforan.
Uh-huh.
So we slept underneath.
That's our slappy spot now.
Oh, rad.
These guys fixed all the curbs that go down.
Wow.
Like the banks are over here and there's the driveway here. It's like a little bit of a downhill and you could skate like a half pipe.
Oh, I gotta go check it out. But that, so we slept underneath, not really, we don't even really sleep, but we slept underneath a semi trailer.
Yeah, because you know, it's like a loading.
Yeah, dock. And I think the next day somehow we got over to the pyramid banks, and that was just like you said, dude. How is this even here?
It's insane.
That was incredible, man. Super fun. And then years later, taking all the Think guys down there,
yeah,
and seeing what those guys were doing. You know, watching Drehobel and Phil just like annihilate it, and McKinney just, I was like, whoa, dude, how can you? Yeah,
this is next level. I got this crazy line of Tim there where he ollies up the curb and hits it as a hip. I was like watching it recently while I was doing all this archival stuff. I was like, I don't even remember this, but that's fucked because nobody hit that hip like that.
He had to
that.
Bounce over it.
Yeah. And yeah, that place was sick. There was a bunch of shit like that where you were like kind of getting into street skating and seeing these like options for the first time of like, hey dude, remember that one spot that we've seen all the time?
Yeah.
Now that we know how to skate like this,
yes,
we're gonna take it there.
Yeah.
You know, like you saw somebody do a handrail and you're like, dude, there's a four stair low one over here.
Yeah.
Let's go, let's check it out.
Yeah,
like,
yeah.
You know, like, yeah. And it changed the way I feel like, I don't know how it was before we started skating, but I don't think that people were like, maybe pool hunting, they were looking like that. But when street skating happened, that's when you started driving down streets, looking at things
around.
Way differently.
Yeah, exactly.
Like, that's a spot. That's a spot,
yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
And that to this day, my wife's like, what are you looking at? I'm like, dude, there's a bank to something over there. And she's like, what?
Yeah. I was just talking to somebody else about this recently. It's like, we don't look at the world like everybody else. And I always said this quote. I was like, you know, you see a red curb and you're thinking $350 ticket.
Mm-hmm.
I see a red curb and I'm thinking, yes, dude, fun. Let's get this going.
Yeah.
You know, super rad. And like having that perspective on life and looking at the world in a different perspective, a different lens. I think besides like architects, I think skateboarders have that ability to take that vision of our way of we look about our environment in a different way to like every situation that we're in. How do I maneuver in this?
Right.
How do I adapt to this? Mm. How do I adjust who I am in this situation to fit into the situation, you know, or blend in so the cops don't chase me?
Right.
You know, what do I do with my board real quick? What do I do with my attitude real quick? And how do I shift? And skateboarding to me has always been this like really beautiful, artistic, psychological way to actually create.
100%. Yeah. I mean, there's so many aspects, right? You got the videographer, the photographer doing their creative. You got skaters that are doing their creative. Then you got skaters that are doing video and yeah. photography and mixing all these things. And then the music aspect, we got to get into Ron Allen.
Yeah, for sure.
Because I know he was a huge influence for you guys.
Huge.
But like Ron's the guy where it's like, he's making the music for his skating that's going, and you're like, what is this? Dude, that's Ron Allen. You're like, it makes it even sicker because you're yeah. just like, this is cool. What is this? You're like, dude, it's the dude that's skating. And you're yeah. like,
yeah,
perfect.
Yeah, and you said something right about the music thing, because for me, all my friends, not all my friends, a lot of my friends from Daly City or San Francisco were at the very beginning of hip hop.
Mm-hmm.
So
right.
the Think video has a lot of my friends in there. You know, other Think videos later on, even when we had Jesse Paez on, like, you know, TD Camp from Bored Stiff did music for that video.
Yeah.
So it was like, and you said something that's really important, I think, that like people outside of skateboarding don't realize, is like skateboarders became photographers. Skateboarders became the filmers and the editors. So I think that's such a unique thing, because knowing what angles look good.
Right.
Knowing what...
The optimal moment. You can't have a bail. Like, the San yeah. Francisco Chronicle shows a photo and it's the dude flailing yeah, like, and he yeah. thinks it looks great. And you're like, dude, he bailed that way.
And it's X Games promoting, like, random, like you said, random photos or just, like, the wrong angles and all that stuff. It's like, no, dude, we know what we're doing. We know how to promote our culture. And we gatekeeped it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, to a certain level to this day, you know, and now you got, I don't know, man, I'm not going to talk shit, but there's this kind of industrialized momentum behind it all. And it's kind of like, don't lose the soul.
Mm-hmm.
Don't lose that grit.
Right.
You know? And granted, you know, everything evolves and it's got to be polished. And, you know, but I think like we were talking about it on the way up here, my brother and Jake Rosenberg and myself, about how, you know, we were just creating and making it happen, and there was no rules, and we right. were having fun,
right?
And now with this advent of like Instagram, even my brother was like, dude, we got to go back on the road, man. We got to start doing demos again. We got to start connecting with shops again. It's yep. like, it's so important.
Absolutely. You know? FaceTime.
Yeah.
And that's what this era of kids doesn't have. They
yeah.
they're all screen, and you're like, dude, you don't know how important it is to come into a shop and have that shop guy look at you in the face and you're like, you came to my shop?
Yeah, exactly.
And that means the world to these people to see you,
yeah.
you know, support. Fuck yeah, I'm going to buy a shirt, dude. Like, you know, and it's like,
yeah.
oh, we're forever.
Exactly.
Like, that's the brotherhood.
It's the brotherhood. It's the community. It's the support system. It's the lifeline of like, this dude behind the counter has got so much of his own commitment to this culture to help it live,
mm-hmm.
you know? And
yes, they do the
there's
Lord's
a part
work.
Of what's happened now, and people always talk to me about like the skateboarding culture and everything, and it's so blown out, you know? But there's still skate shops, and there's gotta get to a point where the brands go back to fully supporting the skate shops
mm-hmm.
and take that shit that you're selling online off. Let the dude at the skate shop eat more. You know, you want to blow out some product every once in a while, work it out with the shop. Don't put it on your own site. Like, let everybody feel that unity back again that we had in the 90s and the early 2000s. Let's get some unity going on where the brands are supporting the shop, shops are supporting the brands. And then, you know, I saw the guys talking on another podcast about this, like, there's got to be more gatekeeping. Like, you don't get to just go online and order 10 boards and put your buddy's name on it because your buddy's a ripper.
Mm-hmm.
Like, there's levels. Like, I realized it, like, I knew what pro skateboarders were on think skateboards level,
mm-hmm.
and paying attention to the industry. But then when I was a general manager at Girl, something that one day I was in the warehouse and I realized, like, as I was working with this guy, Brian Mattee, about production. And I was like, we need to ramp up production, dude. We're going to order, you know, these guys have 4 or 5 models each. We're going to do 1,500 of each model and we're going to have it on rotation. And I saw how fast things were going. And I was like, okay, Mike, Rick, Guy, you know, Rudy, all these dudes were selling so many fucking boards every month. I'm like, this is a real skateboarder. This is what it takes to be a real pro. They put out video parts. They're supporting the teams they ride for. They're not some corny bullshit. They're not just some random dude who gets his name on his board because his buddy thinks it's fucking cool,
mm-hmm.
you know? And to see how they did it in their model compared to, and what we did at Think, and even Rocco did it at his, you know, and that's, people brought that up to me, like, well, dude, you were one of the first guys that was like rogue and you guys started your own brand. So what's wrong with these other guys, or, you know, doing their own brands? I'm like, the difference between what we did in the 90s and what the kids are doing now is we personally had so much invested already. And I'm not talking just financially, but what we did for the culture, and then now, and bringing people up, and the amount of money that we all spent. Like, people always talk about, like, oh, now Greg Carroll and Mickey Reyes, dude, don't quit their teams, they're fucking gnarly, da 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 da. It came up, and I've talked to Diego Bucheri about this. I'm like, dude, you quit right after we spent hundreds of thousands of dollars to build you.
Yeah.
That stings, right? I get it. I know why he did it. But from a company owner standpoint, like, and I talked to other, at this point I've consulted with a lot of these guys about how it is when you spend so much money to build somebody up and they just jump over to the other side.
Yeah.
It stings, man. And you don't get to recover from that fairly quickly,
mm-hmm.
emotionally, but also financially. And then you get a bitter taste in your mouth of like, dude, do I really want to spend all this money to fucking help this dude, or is he going to jump ship, you know? And then now you got people who are just, I'm going to quit my board sponsor and I'm going to start my own brand. You know, which is, on one level, that's the evolution of it. But right. when it's cannibalizing the culture and nobody can make money.
Yeah.
I mean, the fact that pro skateboarders have 2 or 3 jobs now, even in the 90s, they didn't do that. So it's sad to see what skateboarding is. The industry has done, and the kids around it that are doing this to the industry.
Yeah, a lot of things happened, right? I mean, with the popularity, it equals watered down. Like, now there's 500 skaters that are pro instead of 20.
And 1,000 companies instead of 20.
And 1,000 companies. But you're right, like Deluxe, Think, NHS, those guys were legit. And then you have, like, you know, I was talking to Shirugi about it, and he was like, I didn't even know what Confusion was.
Yeah.
It was just like Joe Lopes and some dude out of a garage. They weren't even on our radar. It wasn't that we didn't like them. We didn't even know about it, right?
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And so, like, skate your whole life, but don't think that you're going to be Tony Hawk, you know?
Yeah, but this is my point about that. It's like, there will always be the ones that stand above,
right?
Like, skill level. Like, however many people want to hate on Nyjah, that dude's one of the best in the world.
For sure.
And Sheckler.
Yeah.
Sheckler used to get so much shit growing up, dude. Look at him now. The dude rips, you know? But it's like, that's what I mean. Like, that's a level of skateboarding that they should have a board. They should be getting paid. They don't need to go fucking get all these other extra jobs. And then there's other guys that it's like, you know, but who is to say, like, at what level? It's like, we had rankings. Like, you're going to go to NSA. If you don't do good NSA, you're not getting
right.
a board.
Right.
None of that's anymore, because here you are. You could put out Instagram clips on a regular and become internet famous. Are you going to sell boards? The attention span now is so short.
Yeah.
I remember talking to my brother about this years ago when Instagram first came. I'm like, dude, how are you guys even getting riders now? He's like, dude, it's so fucking hard, because you... 1 week, one dude's the guy, The next week he's gone and there's another guy. It's too much, too fast, too many brands, too many people ripping. But not that there's too many people ripping, it's how the presentation of the skateboarding itself is being presented.
Yeah.
And how the industry on a business level then has to adjust what it's doing to cater to the market. Instead of what we did was we dictated how the market was going to respond.
Mm.
Now the industry is responding to social media.
Yeah. And I mean, it's like the Thrasher website. It's like these guys put out this video part that's like, you know, I always tell this story. I used to watch Mark Appleyard's Sorry part every morning. Me and Zawanich would throw it in, watch it, get hyped, and start exactly. working. Now you watch whatever is on the junk drawer that morning. The next day, there's already something just as good.
Yeah.
Like that piece that this guy worked for 2 years maybe to put together.
Yeah.
It's like, it's not the feature.
It's the value of it.
It's like a conveyor belt. And you're like, oh. And I think that's what we're trying to do at Thrasher right now is kind of like, dude, let these things breathe a little. Like, dude, this is a fucking really good thing and it shouldn't just be shuffled through.
Exactly. That's my point. It's like the industry got caught up in allowing Instagram to dictate how they were going to respond and market themselves and create the culture instead of the industry saying, you know what? We're not going to do this.
Mm.
You know, we had a conversation about this on the way up here because it was like, yeah, but you can't tell a writer like, hey, don't put out this footage right now. We're going to do a video. I'm like, yeah, you can. But it's the same thing we dealt with in the 90s when shoe companies came out.
Mm.
It's like, here we are filming a Think video and Dan and Phil dump some of their almost amazing stuff over to America to get that gun. And then a lot of guys would on DC and all these other shit, everybody had all these multiple sponsors now that you had to film these video parts. So the fragmentation started there. But then when you get the Instagram thing coming out and it was new, we didn't know how to adjust to it. And then the writers were like, oh shit, I could just drop shit all the time. And now it's about me.
Yeah.
The ego came in. This is about me. This is about me ripping. But then they create this culture of like, I have to do this every fucking day or I disappear.
Well, that's the thing like Clyde and I talked about, and Clyde was like super adamant about, this is the problem with modern skaters is they don't have an identity. And like Nodis had the cat, right? Gon's had his thing. Clyde's got his little guy. Yeah. Like these are all me
Iconics.
That no matter what brand I go to, I bring this with me and that's who I am.
Yeah.
So like, I'm not like, we talk about this all the time. You're not Schmitty from Thrasher, you're Schmitty.
Exactly.
And wherever you go, you're Schmitty.
Yeah.
And it's the same thing with these skaters. Like you need to market yourself in a way where it's like, whether you move on, you still got what you've built.
Yes.
You don't want to start all over like,
yeah,
here I am now.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. I'm glad you brought that up because in 2000, maybe it was four. No. Yeah. 2004, 2005. Remember when the original Baker video came out?
Yeah.
I watched that and I was like, fuck yeah, dude. Hardcore punk skateboarding is back.
Mm-hmm.
It's not the whole polished, all due respect to Mike and those guys at Girl, that whole vibe. It was like those dudes just came in, boom, the hammers. Mm-hmm. And you said something about the icons, like the fact that Jim Greco made the hammer his icon.
Mm-hmm. Exactly.
Know? It's like there's an identity. It's Tommy with the sword.
Yeah.
You know, it's these other dudes with different icons. You know, it's Mike with the macaroni and cheese kind of thing. It's like there's a part of you that gets to be marketed in a way that saves your identity as a person
mm-hmm.
and who you are. And then when Rocco came in and it was like random video, I mean, random fucking graphics, like let's just do this really quick. And then, you know, pros at the time too, like, what do you want for a graphic? Well, I don't know.
Right.
Just do whatever's cool.
Yeah.
You know, I had some guys that were smart enough to be like, I don't know, bro, just fucking make something that's gonna sell. And then you had guys like Phil that would come in and be like, this is what I want. And we're like, oh, Giant. I remember Giant's like, dude, I don't think this is going to sell. He's like, I don't give a fuck. I want this as my graphic. And it's so like, good. Oh, dude, you got some crazy, weird, morbid dead kid on like one of your first graphics. But it was like his girlfriend's mom's painting that he wanted to honor her or something, you know?
Yeah.
No, just weird stuff like that. But it's like, now it's like, yeah, you know, and then people talk shit about these dudes about, you know, oh, he's just a jock and he's on this fucking program. And then it's like, good. These dudes are eating big, buying houses.
Yeah.
All you dudes that are hating, you better figure something out, man.
Yeah.
You know, because this is how the evolution of it happening happens. It's like all the vert dudes, it's like, I remember when we started Think and we got Sergio Ventura on. You know, I knew Sergio because of, you know, Hosoi and Venture and all that stuff. I hooked him up with that. And he was just like, dude, I've been working at IHOP, bro.
Fuck.
You know, and hearing a lot of these other vert dudes, like, that didn't shift over to street, like, their whole lives fell apart. You know, and it's like, okay, now X Games came in, and I was like, dude, we could really help even more of these vert dudes get back. Like, Bucky Lassick, dude, one of my favorite people. Ripper.
Fuck yeah.
Look at how much he's done.
My shit's taken care of.
Yeah.
You know, even, you know, Danny, Colin.
Some of these guys.
Alfonso Rawls.
Like, even Lance Mountain seems like he got better with age somehow.
Yeah.
You're like, dude, this guy's like 45 putting together a full part that's amazing.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
When we were kids, I don't know how you guys felt, but like, I feel like the next generation was like, dude, 25, you're still skating? That's crazy.
Well, dude, this is, you said something really important, man. There was a window of time, mid-90s, when, or maybe it was, yeah, 93, 94, when most pros were like, oh my God, dude, am I going to retire at 23, 24, you know, like, yeah. You were lucky if you were 25. And I was like, I remember Fausto and those guys, like, you got to get more younger kids and da-da-da-da. And they made me fire Wade Spire because we were putting Colt Cannon on or some shit. And I was like, fucking, what is wrong with you people? Like, Drhobl is one of the best skateboarders in the world. He's like on Gonz's level at this point, in my opinion, like how versatile he was. Like, what are you guys doing, man? And that really like fucked me up because I remember sitting in a restaurant and talking to Wade and he was like, what the fuck are you saying, dude? I'm like, dude, you're one of my best friends, bro. I can't even believe I have to do this, dude. This is so fucking retarded. And now, my brother's 50.
Damn.
Ripping still.
Fuck.
You know, Cab, still ripping.
Yeah.
TA, 65 or something.
Dude.
Still going.
Yeah, Ron Allen, 60-something.
Yeah, Ron Allen, 60-something. And it's like, there's not a lot of longevity because of what the industry has allowed to happen. You know? Oh, we're going to let anybody, these board shop guys, everybody's got to eat, I get it, but you're allowing anybody to make a board. No minimums, or maybe a 20, 30, 40 board minimum. You're blowing shit out. There's too many fucking brands. Again, it's the nature of the beast. Okay, cool. But where does it go from here?
I mean, everything from what I keep hearing is everything goes in cycles, that skateboarding's always died,
it's 10 year
come
cycles.
Back.
It's 10 years.
And
cycles.
So like when it dies, that's when everyone regroups and thinks, how are we gonna do this better for us this next round or whatever? Yeah. It's gnarly right now. I mean, with Instagram, YouTube, video cameras on your phone, there's access for people to do everything.
Yeah, now you can edit your video part on your phone.
Exactly.
Yeah,
you
but
know,
there's got to be a weeding out.
Like, dad cam is gone. It's me cam.
Yeah. Yeah. Set up your fucking tripod and film part.
Yeah.
But the thing is, what I realized, you know, it's like, yeah, the 10-year cycles, this time, and it's based off of the economy of the world right now, you know, it's going to weed out the people that don't have the money to survive.
For sure.
And it's going to weed out bigger brands. It's already happening. People are struggling. People are closing down their warehouses. People are shrinking down, going from 30 employees to 10. You know, all that stuff. It's like, but that's what skateboarders do. We adapt. And if you're really core and you're really into it, you'll make it happen.
And now, another first impression from Timothy Donald McKenney.
My first impressions of Greg Carroll, ex-team manager, big bro of skateboarding, and just my friend, is, believe it or not, again, here we go, Palo Alto Skate Park. And I show up and he's there with Johnny. He's watching Johnny Fair rip. And I actually, this is for the first time, seen Johnny Fair rip in PA. I was like, damn, he's really trying today. He was doing a frontside 360s out of the titties. I'm pretty sure he was wearing some Airwalk Enigmas, dude, some shorts, dude, and a long sleeve or something. But I remember Greg and his bunch with Johnny, and it was the first time that I'd seen how the industry runs. So I was watching low-key one of the locals perform for Venture, technically. And if you get a chance, go watch the first Venture video. He's in it at Palo Alto, at Stanford, and it's a pretty ripping part, actually. So check that out.
Hello, this is James Kelch, and you're listening to Talking Schmidt.
It's just a weird one for me to see, like how popular skateboarding got. It kind of changed the way people looked at it from a business side. Like, oh, dude, I don't need to work two jobs. I can just, like, sell more shirts. I can, like, make some, I don't know, trinkets, whatever, keychains, all these different things. Mm-hmm. I can sell a bunch of shit and make way more money because everybody's wearing it and buying it.
Yeah.
And it's that part is the part that I struggle with, to see, like, how is skateboarding struggling? Like, right. How are you struggling? It's more popular than it's ever been.
Because there's too many brands.
And the shoe companies are doing a lot of it. I get that. But it's really weird.
Yeah, the thing is with, okay, so to your point about, like, you reach a level where you have this money, you have success, you have a bunch of employees. Me personally, when you get to a point where there's 30 dudes working for you, men and women, and all of a sudden,
yeah,
things start going down, and you care about these people. Some of these people have families.
For sure.
And you're just like, oh my God, dude, what are we gonna do, bro? We gotta fucking figure this out. And then you gotta start doing the layoffs.
Mm.
Then you gotta start saying, like, well, okay, maybe this dude has to go ride for somebody else. Or he gets hit up. I've had guys think, dude, these dudes are offering me this. Not my riders, but other people, like people that I have consulted with.
Yeah.
And I'm like, well, obviously your loyalty runs deep with this brand, but you said earlier, there's a window here for you.
Right.
If you give this opportunity for the brand you're working with to step up and match what you're getting offered from this other one, cool. If that's not going to happen, then you got to pivot and go to this other one. Skateboarders learning how to be a business person.
Mm.
But when you got to start laying off people, it fucking hurts, bro.
You're at IHOP with Wade.
Yeah, it's fucking lame. And yeah, that starts at the pro level, and then it goes into like, oh, we don't need four guys in the warehouse. We just need two. We don't need six sales guys. We need one.
Right.
So then you're just like, oh my God, dude, I'm a failure.
Mm.
My brand's a failure. My ego gets hit.
Yeah.
All these things start playing into factors. That's where I mean, like, you're in psychological financial warfare with yourself. You know, it's me at Empire thinking like, fuck, dude, I'm the one who pulled all these guys together. And now the economy's tanking. And Justin Williams put a massive amount of money in. I put money in, I co-signed personal guarantees for stuff. What the fuck, dude? The shit starts, you start throwing shit on the wall. And then the room starts to fill with shit and you're drowning and you're just like, I need to pull the plug, dude.
Fuck, yeah.
And then the devastation comes in. Just like you said earlier, your identity, everything, who you are is this brand, this culture, this everything. And then you're just like, I just let down all these guys who believed in me. I'm talking about my own personal experience. I've let down all these guys. I had conflict with some of these dudes. I love all these guys. Like, what the fuck are we doing? I got to shut down.
Mm.
And being so shameful and so just like devastated that I just go by myself for, you know, years trying to figure it out. Like, what happened to me? Where's my identity? First time in my adult life, there's no brand attached to my name. Oh, you're just Greg Carroll. But you just rebuild. It goes back to skateboarding. You slam, get the fuck back up, learn a new trick.
Right. I mean, we have that mentality. At the same time, is there, like, do you have regret too? Like, I had think, we left, we tried to do this, and I thought I was going to do this? Or, like, no. Is it just more about, like, feeling the pain of, like, having something and then losing it?
Well, with think, it was in the very beginning, before think even started, I was working, maybe think, yeah, it was the very beginning, first few months. We're down in the shipyards, me, Keith, and Fausto, and I don't even remember what the conversation was, but Fausto popped off to me and said some wild shit, like raised his voice at me. And I looked at him, I was like, I don't know who the fuck you think you're talking to, bro. I don't give a fuck who you are. I quit. And I walked out of the office at the shipyards, and I walked to my car, and the dude followed me out to my car, and I was like, what, bro? He's like, what's going on with you, man? Like, why are you leaving? I was like, fuck you. Nobody talks to me like this. I don't give a fuck how much money you got, what businesses you own. I don't give a fuck about you, bro. No one speaks to myself like that. And he was like, let's talk about this. I'm like, I grew up in a fucking violent, loud home, dude. Physical abuse. I'm not dealing with that shit here. Mm. And he was like, whoa. He's like, I'm sorry. I was like, apology accepted. He's like, you want to, you come back inside or something like that? I was like, sure. But if you ever speak to me that way again, I'm fucking leaving. That's 1989, summer.
Wow.
November 22nd, 2022. He said the most evilest shit I've ever heard a human being say to somebody. To Keith Cochran.
Hmm.
And we walked out of there. And Keith, Keith's a gangster, bro. I've seen this dude drop big dudes. We've done some shit together. Fucking hated each other for a little while, whatever the fuck. But we worked through our shit. I love that dude. And we walked back into Keith's office, and I was like, dude, what in the fuck just happened, man?
Mm.
And he goes, I don't know, dude. I was like, dude, how are we not murking this dude right now? Like, what he just said to you, dude, is the most fucking disrespectful shit ever. And he goes, I don't know what it is about him, bro. I don't know if he's like, because he's like my dad and with Eric and
right.
All this shit, dude. And I was like, dude, I don't know about this, bro. And I'm going to preface this. I love Fausto. He gave us opportunity. He fucking helped me through some shit in my life. But at the time, I think that he started losing his mind a little bit.
Mm.
Him and Eric were going at it. Shit was going weird, and he said some wild shit to Keith, and he came over and started fucking popping off to both me and Keith while we're in Keith's office. He goes, you think you run this by yourself? Then fucking do it. Fuck you. I was like, I've been doing this since I was 18. Fuck you. I quit.
Damn.
And he slams the fucking door, and Keith's like, dude, what the fuck? I'm like, bye. And I walked to my office. I packed up a little bit of my shit. I told Brian Coons in the warehouse. I said, dude, can you grab the rest of my shit out of here and deliver it to my house? I'm fucking done. And Wade Spires in the warehouse.
No.
Riding for Black Label.
Oh, shit.
And I'm about to take Wade to the airport because he's still one of my best friends.
Oh.
Because I still have loyalty to the dude who helped us fucking get this shit going.
Right.
And we're riding to the fucking airport, and Wade's like, dude, what the fuck just happened? He's like, did you just quit? I was like, yeah, bro. The next morning, I woke up with fucking, you can relate, dude, anxiety, like a fucking elephant's on my chest. And I'm like, oh my God, dude, what the fuck am I going to do?
Mm-hmm.
This is my fucking dream, dude. It just turned into a nightmare. And I was like, and my buddy's like, I don't know if you know who Gerard Secretario is, one of the Hawaiians.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, so he hits me up, and I was like, bro.
Pro, right?
He's like, I'm like, let's hang out, bro. Like, he was just funny. He worked at Think for a little while. I hired him over there.
Yeah.
And he worked for me at Girl, too. But I had him take me down to this place. And both my arms were just freshly, you know, tatted out. And I was like, I was waxing my arms and fucking, I was like, yeah, bro, whatever, fucking pain. Like, let's get through this. And I went home. And Gerard was like, what are you going to do, bro? I was like, fuck, dude, I'm gonna call Brian, my travel agent, dude, and book me some flights. Called up Brian, he's like, dude, you going on tour again? I was like, nah, this is solo, bro, I just quit. He's like, congratulations, dude, that's just fucking awesome. He said, where are you going? And I went to Costa Rica, went to Australia. And then when I was in Australia, that's when my brother hit me up. He was like, what are you doing, bro? I was like, dude, I'm just hanging out, kind of wilding out here. And he's like, well, you know, what do you do for work? I was like, fuck, I have no clue, man. He's like, well, maybe you could work for us. I was like, what do you mean? He's like, I don't know. You're like a gnarly like CEO kind of dude, but like maybe you could do something over here, you know, Mike. I was like, all right, fucking that sounds amazing, bro. Because I literally had no clue.
Ah.
You know, and I went in and I spoke with Rick a little bit. And then me and Megan, I don't remember if Rick was in the office, but me and Megan just started chatting. And I was kind of interviewing her and she was interviewing me. And I was like, I would love to be here, you know. She's like, well, let's have you be our general manager. But I had to figure out how to be a general manager for girl.
Yeah.
And that super calm, mellow kind of vibe. And I think you kind of know where I'm going with this, because Think and High Speed was fucking Fausto yelling at us.
Yeah.
A lot of disrespect and a lot of just barging in your office and all this wild shit. So I remember Jake Phelps, actually, one of the only good things Jake Phelps said to me before I left, this is years before, he said, when you go somewhere else, don't do everything all at once like Greg Carroll does. Don't go full bore, give him a little bit and see what happens. But I'm like, this is my brother's company. I'm going here and I'm gonna fucking shine, dude. I need to prove that I know what the fuck I'm doing.
Yeah.
But the first day, I'm go to get in my truck to drive from Hollywood to Torrance and I'm fucking having an anxiety attack. I'm like, oh my God, dude, do I even know what the fuck I'm doing? Am I smart? I'm a special ed kid.
Mm.
Like maybe Fausto's right. I'm not fucking, I'm, you know, whatever. And I'm like, took a breath and I heard like this spirit voice. Because it's the same thing, man. It's just different faces.
Mm.
So I went in and I Steve Douglas, might have been the first week or something. He came and visited me. I've known him since I was a kid.
Okay.
He's like, hey, bro, these are some books you should check out. And I think one of them might have been like, Who Moved My Cheese? And that just, it was these two mice in a maze and they saw this big lump of cheese and they were going after the cheese. And one of them was like, okay, they eat the whole cheese. And one of them was like, I'm not hanging out anymore. I'm gonna move, I'm gonna get through this maze. I'm gonna get some more cheese. And then the other one was stuck on the cheese. Like, it's gonna come back. So I told Megan, I said, can we order all these books? And she's like, all right. And to this day, I got people from Girl to hit me up like, dude, that book changed my life.
Okay.
Yeah, it's about change, it's about adjusting, it's about adapting. For me personally, I had to learn how to communicate. Like, these people don't just show up in your office. They send you an email, hey, can we schedule a time to meet today? What? Like, okay, they have schedules. And at the time, they didn't have any like department managers. So I was like, okay, Annie Jenkins is gonna be this dude, this dude's gonna be the production, this guy's gonna be this. And I just appointed all these like generals.
Yeah.
You know, and then I was like, okay. But it got to be the point where I learned how to delegate, which started with Justin Williams, Marcel Turner, and Matt McGinley. Here, guys, I'm going to hire you guys to do my entire job for me, but this is how you do it. Da, 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 da. So it's just like the template was there. You just keep going.
Right.
Adapt.
Huh. That's...
And then 6 months into it, Megan's like, you need to slow down.
Oh.
Like, we don't work till 7 o'clock at night. I was like, what? She's like, you know, and then a little bit later, I was like, hey, you know, Megan, I need more work to do, because I was kind of sitting there like just in an email vortex. And I was like, this is not what they hired me for. She's like, you're the general manager. I'm not giving you any more work to do. Just go talk to people. Hang out. See what's going on. That's what you're good at. They called me the regulator because I regulate.
You didn't want to pull a Zooch and start just playing video games?
I hated being on the computer, man. Yeah.
Well, let's go back a little bit because I do know from my personal experience, I think you would agree, Fausto was part of the thing that we talked about earlier, which was letting somebody that doesn't have a lot of experience have a chance. So yeah. Myself included, I don't know how to film, but you're a skater. I want you to try to film.
Yeah.
And we're going to have a little patience with you. We're probably not going to pay you a lot, but you're going to get gas receipts and get to hang out with the dudes and do this. And at some point, it's going to click.
Yeah.
Or you're gone.
Yeah.
And so for you, I'm guessing, because I know you guys were on 8th Street, but the part that's foggy for me that I would be stoked to talk to you about is the Dogtown era, where they came to SF for a little bit. I don't know if there was an investment in that from Fausto, but we're running Dogtown out of here. I think Keith was in charge, and maybe that's kind of where Think sprouted out of that or something.
So we'll go a little bit. You mentioned A Street. So prior to me getting on H Street, I was saying, obviously, that we went to skate camp.
Right.
The A Street dudes came up and stayed at our house.
Oh.
All the footage in the first H Street video of my brother when he was really tiny, that's like him getting on H Street right there.
Is that all through Ron Allen? Like the connection to those guys?
No.
It's skate camp?
It was skate camp because Ron was there, but then that was down in San Luis Obispo.
Right.
First when we met Ron, the first time he wrote for Magnuson. And Ternaski was there, but it wasn't even H Street yet.
Mm-hmm.
And then fast forward when Santa Clara skate camp came, that was when it was like Rich Ezekiel, Brennan Schaffel, Carl Hyman.
Yeah.
Like all those dudes were there where they're just like, oh my God, dude. But Rich Ezekiel and I can't remember who else was with us. Brian Lottie came up. And I think that's when Mike Ternaski was like, whoa, okay, this kid rips, meaning my brother. And then that evolved to Mike getting on. But then there was a contest, I think it was in Vegas or Arizona, we talked about it, I can't remember, on the way up here, but me, Kit Erickson, and Matt Hensley were all skating this bench together.
Mm.
And Matt was doing like kickflip backside tail slides, and Kit was doing like dope backside lip slides, and I was like, okay, hard for me to go backside, but I started doing frontside 270 backside tail slides. And me and Kit were like, yo, this is it, dude, we're gonna get on today. You know, and Kit was just, you know, Kit, dude, bubbly, you know, excited attitude, and, you know, he's just charismatic, and, you know, Kit got on and I didn't, but then Ron was like, you're gonna ride for me, bro. And I was like, what? Because I knew that, like, Tommy sponsored Joel Rona from Marin.
Yep.
And he just rode Tommy boards, and I was like, so I get to ride your board? And I was like, yeah. He goes, I mean, you could ride OJs and, you know, you can ride Street Shadows. But I was like a Thunder dude at the time. I was getting Thunders and Spitfires from Shrugi. But then it was like Ron basically like took me under his wing. And I thank God, dude, that he put up with my little immature ass.
Mm.
You know, I remember one time I would call him like 15 times. They're like, when are we going to meet? Where are we going to go? Da-da-da-da-da. He's like, dude, I don't know yet, bro. Like, stop calling me, you know. But like getting in the car with him and going to skate around was just like, wow, dude. You know, it was him taking me under his wing and then eventually getting on A Street. But then A Street just became this huge mega scenario with like too many riders. They sent, and I say this and I have all due respect for John Sonner, but they started sending me John Sonner vert boards and like these random boards I never would ride. And I just like, I'm cool. And right around that time, though, Javante was hanging out with Jim Thebo a lot. And we were all hung, you know, so Javante started bringing me around Jim. And Jim was like, all right, well, you know, why don't I give you some boards? So he gave me a couple Nautis boards, and I think I wrote a couple of his boards. But then how I got on Dogtown, I was skating at the Pacifica ramp. I don't know if you remember, if you ever skated there.
Yeah, with the extensions.
Yeah.
That's where I met Eric J.
That's where I get. That's Eric J was there that day. And I was like, what? Okay, you got like Chad Vaught in there, Mike.
Yeah.
You got, this dude is like on a whole nother level. But Keith Cochran shows up with Dean Coppola. And I know Dean Coppola through Daly City because he lived on 87th, and 87th, they had these jump ramps. Like not, there was like, not jump ramps, but like driveways, but they were like little kickers.
Mm.
So we would skate there all the time. And Dean was, and he was also friends with Mike Del Campo and Matt Foggy, who I mentioned earlier. So Mike was Mike already, killing it. And I was skating the way I was skating. And then if it wasn't for Dean Coppola saying to Keith, like, dude, we should hook Greg up, bro. Let's get him on Dogtown.
Mm.
Right? And to give you a preface into how Dogtown even got up here,
yeah,
it's my understanding that, you know, Jim was going through stuff down there, was kind of sketchy, wasn't really, he was having a hard time. And when, I guess he probably approached, I think Fausto approached him, or maybe he approached Fausto to get some help. And when they brought it up, Keith actually invested into
Dogtown. Oh, did Stesic have something to do with it? Because I know Fausto and Stesic was.
Yeah, yeah.
Okay.
So with that, you know, Keith was like, all right, yeah, but you got to go to the NSA contest up in Corvallis. You place, you can get on.
That's the one.
And I was like, but you got to remember this, bro. I'm getting in the van with Dogtown dudes, and I'm an H Street guy. At the time, all of Dogtown hated H Street.
Was that like Karma and those guys?
No, this is pre-Karma.
Before that.
Yeah, this is.
This is like Dressin. This is Dressin,
Schroeder, Aaron.
Damn.
Cardiel had maybe just got on.
Okay.
I think maybe Wade might have been in the van.
Okay.
But it was like, oh my God, dude, like this is not going to be good. I was kind of like intimidated.
Yeah.
But you know.
Those guys are intimidating.
Yeah, they were intimidating, Venice, dude. Yeah, it was Venice dudes, but yeah. it was the AMs, you know. But we got in the van. The ride up there was cool. I literally just placed 16th, so I made the cut. Thank God for Matt Hensley's, you know, he grabbed the board 360 barrel, and I think that was like the clincher, and I did some other tricks, and then they're like, okay, you're on. And then it was a very, very short time span because that was like the summer of 89. And then by the end of the summer 89, I was already on Dogtown, but I was still riding Gold Wings. And there was that contest down in Salinas that Justin Gerard just annihilated.
Mm.
And that's when Fausto and, I don't know if it was Fausto. I think it was Eric and Keith came up to me and they're like, hey man, like, you can't be riding those Gold Wings anymore. Because I rode for Gold Wing, because of A Street. And I was like, what? Like, well, you know, you ride for Dogtown, we don't do that, you know. And you know, what do you think about being the team manager for Indy? I was like, I don't really like those trucks, so if I could still ride Gold Wings and be the team manager, I'll do that. They looked at me like, did you really just say that? And at hindsight, I'm like, damn, I was a fucking naive dumbass. Like, this doesn't work like that. I didn't know anything about the industry.
Of course.
So, you know, but then like, they're like, well, you know, what about Venture? And I was like, those trucks suck, man. I can't ride those trucks. They don't even turn right. But for whatever reason, probably Cochran, credit to him, he's like, dude, I need you to come down and meet Fausto. So then it was when Fausto, when Deluxe still had Brian Ware stuff in there, they had some Dogtown stuff in there, Thunder, Spitfire.
Yeah.
And I walk in this office and here's this fucking dude with a mustache. And I was like, this dude's some kind of like a smuggler, like weird shit. Like, what are we doing here? But then he was just like, okay, these guys are telling me about you. And da, 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 da. And I was like, all right. You know, and he's like, I want you to be the Venture guy. And I was like, but those, I can't do those trucks, man. And then Grant, I don't know who Fausto is. I don't know if he had, what his whole position is here. I'm fucking super naive, bro.
Yeah.
I don't know he's indie. I don't know he's high speed, thrasher, none of that shit.
Okay.
But he's like, look.
That's probably to your advantage.
Yeah, I'm 18.
Less intimidated.
Yeah, I didn't know. I'm not even tripping. And I was like, I'm 18 years old. And I was like, well, can we change the truck? He's like, yeah, you can design the truck. I was like, can we make magnesiums? Because Gold Wing's making magnesiums. He's like, you're going to talk to Swenson. We can change everything.
Right.
You know, and I was like, how much am I going to get paid? And at the time, I just found an Irmaco receipt, dude. $320 a week or some shit. But it was more than I was making at this print shop that I was cleaning screens at. So I was like, hell yeah, bro.
Yeah.
So I get the job and I walk outside and I think it's Solomon and Jason and maybe Sean Mandoli. And I'm like, you guys want to ride for Venture? And hook the homies up right there. And
your first day, you got three riders.
Yeah, and then it was like Greg Hunt got on, and then me and him have a trippy connection because we're both from Ann Arbor, Michigan.
Oh, that's right.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So we were like, what? And I met him through Sheffy and because of Shut, you know, because we were giving Shut stuff. Yeah. And it was just rad, dude. And then just, it kind of just evolved. And then eventually we had... the V6s came out, and then I did the V8s, and then we had the magnesiums, you know, and then the feather lights.
So when you're going in there and they're like, we need you to do Venture, What's up with Rocco? Because Rocco was before you, right?
Yeah. No, Keith. So first it was Rocco.
Rocco to Keith.
Yeah, went to from Rocco, and I don't know how long Rocco was there as the team manager, being the team manager. I don't think he was ever in SF. But then when Keith stopped working in the mailroom and the shipping, I guess, for High Speed, they pulled him over to the team manager position because he was already riding for Blockhead. He was the he is the original Spitfire team rider. First ad for Spitfire with a team rider, him doing that carve in that pool in Pacifica, I think it was.
Keith. Wow.
Yeah. So, and I think the name Spitfire came from Kevin Ancel, maybe. I could be wrong.
Mm, that sounds like
the Spiral logo, even he drew the flame, but that was, you know, I think James Kelch
had a lot to do with it.
James Kelch helped with that logo. But anyway, yeah, so Keith, because he was the Dogtown guy and I was riding for Dogtown, and I guess, I don't know, man, I don't know if it was Keith's decision or Faust's decision, and I always say I probably got this because of my brother, because they all thought that, okay, and I was tapped into the younger dudes.
Right.
They're like, okay, this dude knows what's up. Let's get him in here.
Is this before EMB or during EMB?
This is during.
Okay.
Yeah, this is 1990. I mean, like I said, we started skating EMB in like 86.
Yep.
So 86, 79, boom. It's like that time span of being on Dogtown and having Venture, Dogtown, boom, it was like, holy shit, dude. Then it was like, okay, then here comes Think.
So much shit happened in such a small window.
Small window, dude.
Like, what year was it about that you started doing Venture?
Summer of 89.
89, and then Think is
beginning of 1990. End of 89. 90. End of 89, we were talking about starting a brand like called Move.
Okay,
it was like super random, you know. But then, you know, when Fausto and Keith talked to me about how they wanted to do it, like, we're not going to have any pros, we're going to have all these new guys, you're going to be able to put these dudes on, you know. And I was like, all right, you know. But then simultaneously, because of what was happening with H Street, I don't remember if Mike got kicked off Kepper or he quit or whatever, but I was like, I heard about that he wasn't on A Street anymore, and he was the first dude I called.
Okay.
I was like, dude, you want to fucking turn pro for Think? He was like, fuck yeah. I don't remember the exact conversation, but it's like, you know, me and him been kind of going back and forth on messaging lately, and he sent me a bunch of photos of him like riding a test model of his, you know, and him and Derek Rinaldi, another East Coast dude, on the first very East Coast trip, they like made a makeshift Think sticker and put a big Venture sticker on the back of their, you know, white van, and they were like cruising around on the East Coast, and it was like that just blossomed it, you know.
That's so sick,
you know. And one of the things that I think a lot of people don't know about Think is at a certain point, I don't remember the timeline, maybe you do, is when Mark Oblo approached us about doing a wheel company.
That was Race.
You're at Race Wheels.
Race Wheels. Right? I was going to ask you, but Race versus Circuit, who wins?
Yeah. Well, so with an Oblo, really credit to this dude, how he pulled people and was like, if we're going to do this, we're going to do this with my guys. He had his guys.
Right.
That's how Eric Ricks came in. That's how Mike Santa Rosa came in.
Okay.
You know, and then Race really, I don't, you know, it's one of those things like, okay, yeah, you want to do a brand? And this is the way this camp works. Yeah, we'll do a brand for you. We're not signing any fucking paperwork. Mm. You're gonna get a paycheck, but we're gonna promote your shit.
Yeah.
You know, same thing with Danny and Bill Weiss when they wanted to do Circuit Wheels, you know?
Right.
I don't think there was any paperwork, but it was like, yeah, dude, we'll do a fucking wheel company for you guys.
Putting out the fire.
Yeah. Yeah, all out of Point Tech, you know?
Yeah.
And again, that's like, the ability to have a truck manufacturing, a wheel manufacturing, which also did the bushings for Super Cush. And then, you know, eventually we tried to do a board shop, you know, manufacturing over in the shipyards with the other dude, Tony.
Mm.
You know, one of the guys from Boston with Jake Phelps. But that didn't, you know, it was too moist down there. The humidity was fucked up, didn't really work out.
Mm-hmm.
But the very first original Think tour was me on Think, just coming off of Dogtown, Wade Spire and JJ Rogers.
Whoa.
I'm 19.
Oh, shit.
JJ's 21.
Yes.
So he had to rent the car.
Oh, my God.
You know? And that was like, he had to be the one to check us into the hotel rooms. You know? It was wild, man. And I was riding a Nicky Guerrero board.
Dude, JJ and Wade.
Yeah.
Those two dudes, forever respect, because we used to skate the San Jose warehouse.
Mm-hmm.
And you would, I probably told this story a million times, but we would pull up in the parking lot and it's at a warehouse. So you got like a door open, but you can't see what's in there. You just hear the loudest tail smack you've ever heard. You're like, it's either JJ or Wade. And it's usually both of them. And you just, dude, those guys, all their trick was to make it as loud as you could.
Yeah, man.
I fucking love those dudes skating. But let me take a quick break. I want to check the cameras and then take a piss. And we'll be right back.
All right, guys. That was part one of a two-part series. The full episode will be on YouTube later, and part two will be going up at the same time, so look out for that.